Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to a new episode of the QuakeCast. I'm Dump Truck DS, and joining me this week is...
JCR.
Welcome, JCR.
Yo.
RC is on assignments. This week's guest is Draku. He's a world-renowned, world-class speedrunner. Kind of a Twitch celebrity and a YouTube celeb for doing these massively crazy world record holding speed runs.
We'll also speak to him about his involvement with Diabotical. This is a new fast paced arena FPS game set in a colorful robot universe. We'll see what he is doing for them.
If you've played DM4 Jam or some of his speed maps, you'll know that he has a very high standard for quality, and we'll get into that with him as well. But for now, let's go to the music.
Games in general, I guess I started playing them as a kid. I played a lot of Doom. Doom 1 and 2 and various console games. I had a PC, and even before Doom, played whatever small games, I don't even remember, but mainly Doom was like a big part of my childhood. And then I had a PlayStation 1, played that a lot, and yeah, just games all around. But with Quake specifically, I never played Quake, any of them, as a kid, like when they came out. And it was only like recently I played Quake for the first time. Like Quake 2 was my first game, actually. First Quake. Well, actually Quake 4, I think I might have played when it came out, whenever that was. But then I played Quake 2 when I picked it up for speedrunning back in around 2015, I think. And only after that, I decided to also look at Quake 1, and yeah. Then I did a playthrough of that at some point, and then I ended up also playing a lot of the custom stuff later on.
So obviously you're an extremely serious speedrunner, and you sent me that document, and we took a look at all the games that you've done, all the ones you have former records in, all the ones you hold world records in. So how the heck did you get into speedrunning?
Well... I was already into watching speedruns, and you know how it's really amazing to see runs like Quake and Half-Life, like a segment that runs of those, like a segmented run is just like, it's a compilation of best segments of, let's say Quake, for example, it's the best time you have on E1 M1, and then you move to the next one and so on. That's a segmented run, or just a normal speedrun. It's really like with all the movement tricks and all that, it's just amazing to watch. And, I don't know. I wanted to originally learn a game like Half-Life or Quake, but at that point in time, I also didn't know anything about movement, so it would have been even a bigger task to learn those. I think I did try and start learning Half-Life at some point in time, but I didn't get past like Resonance Cascade, so I kind of shelved the whole idea. But then I ended up, I think in it was 2014. I was watching Summer Games Done Quick, which is a speedrun marathon that happens on site in the States twice a year. And they just play speedruns. They do like for every game, every console imaginable. And they do that for a week and they raise money for charity. And I was watching one of those, and there was this, I just randomly tuned in. There was a game that I had never heard of called La Mulana Remake, which it was around 2 hours, the length of the run. But the guy who was running it, his name is Hidden Distance, he was doing such a good job of explaining every trick that he was doing and what's going on behind those tricks and the execution. And he was making it really entertaining to watch. So I just instantly after the run, like, I couldn't stop watching it. And then instantly after the run, I decided, okay, I'm going to run this. Never heard of the game. Apparently I have it on Steam. You know how sometimes you just end up having games that you've never even heard of. You don't know how you got them, but it was there. And then I just instantly learned it, which is kind of, it's still funny to me because that game is still to this day, even after running as many games as I have, it's still the one that's one of the most difficult ones in terms of how many things you have to remember and execution and all that. But yeah, that's how I got started.
Yeah, and actually, I was going to say La Mulana is, it's impressive to do a run for that because it's kind of a challenging game.
Yeah, it's very like it's not an easy game. First of all, it's like for people who don't know, it's a 2D Metroidvania type thing. It's a Japanese game, and specifically the remake is a remake of an older game, and it's just difficult in general. And there's a lot of cryptic stuff in it. You got to figure out puzzles and go all over the place. And the speedrun at that point in time, as I said, it's around 2 hours, and you have so many things to remember. It's crazy, and you have difficult boss fights and all. Yeah, it's not easy, but it was a lot of fun.
So now take us, so you did a panel, if I'm not mistaken, at QuakeCon in 2000. So how did you get from La Mulana to appearing at QuakeCon as a kind of a distinguished panelist?
I don't know. It's crazy. Like I started speedrunning in 2014, I believe, sometime in 2014. And I didn't even, like, I stream my speedruns. I've always done that. I didn't even start on Twitch. I actually started on hitbox.tv, which was, I don't think even exists anymore. It was just at that point in time, Twitch was changing how they do things, and they started muting VODs that have copyrighted music, which at the time of appearing, it was kind of controversial and people were not happy about it. But of course, it's better. But Hitbox kind of capitalized on that, and they also offered better bit rates and better quality for non-partnered streamers. So I was just like, okay, I'm going to start speedrunning. And I wanted to start streaming at the same time because I thought that this is just an easier way to get my personal bests out there instead of having to record while I'm playing and then edit that and then put it up to YouTube. Instead, it's just there instantly. And then I don't think I even did that on Hitbox that long, maybe a month or two. And then I switched to Twitch. Thank God I did. I don't know what would have happened if I didn't. Obviously, like, I was still running La Mulana when I switched to Twitch. I don't remember how long I did it for. And I didn't have many followers because La Mulana, first of all, is a very niche game. Speedrunning is a niche hobby. And streaming on Twitch as a small streamer who's just started, it's really hard to get noticed at all. Like, I may have gotten a few viewers from Hidden Distance, who I mentioned, who did the run at SGDQ. He might have hosted me a couple of times of that, but I didn't really, you know. And then I slowly moved on to other games. Quake 2 was my second speedrun, and then I think Return to Castlevania might have been my third one, and then I just moved from game to game. And I also did, I don't actually remember, I was really inconsistent with streaming at the start. I took long breaks, and I only started doing it kind of seriously in 2016 with a couple of events, as in, there were things, first of all, in 2016, at that point, I had already done a couple of speedruns. I had some followers, still a fairly small stream. And then a game called Devil Daggers came out. It came out on the 18th of February, which I remember because it is the day before my birthday. It's a small game made by three guys, I believe, from Australia. And the only thing you have to do in that game, it has a beautiful retro aesthetic and beautiful sound design. You basically, you're in an arena and you have to just survive against countless waves of enemies that keep spawning in. And like your progress or your high score, to say, is tracked in seconds of survival. And that's the only thing you do. And I was kind of excited for that game at the start because I saw a few of the pictures or GIFs or whatever they posted on Twitter. And they were kind of tight-lipped about what the game would be about. And I was originally expecting it to be more of a typical single-player experience instead of an arena thing. And I'm not even, I don't know, but I ended up playing it and I had a lot of fun with it, and I ended up being the first in the world to reach 500 seconds survived in the game, which was the point where you got the only achievement in the game, and it was kind of a big thing in terms of the game scene. But no one could have, like, I certainly had no idea about how big that game would end up being in terms of popularity. And it kind of blew up. And when I did that, I streamed it, getting to 500 seconds. And it went around quite a bit on gaming sites and stuff like that.
That game has a dedicated following, and that's just thinking, like, you know, I could nail a speed run in that one. I could just, the surviving it's the same kind of mechanic, but in reverse. But that's pretty crazy, 500 seconds in that game, because I have not purchased that game because I know I would suck at it pretty badly. But props to you. But yeah. But anyway, tell me a little bit about, just to circle back on QuakeCon. So when you ended up over there in Dallas, how did it feel to be kind of this person that kind of came in later to Quake 2 and then was invited to the event?
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, like, I was still leading up to that. There's a lot of build up to all of this. It's like weird in general. Like, when Devil Daggers happened, then I will give you the TLDR of it. Devil Daggers happened. Because of that, I got noticed quite a lot. Because of that, I got invited to the closed multiplayer beta of Doom 2016, where they invited streamers and some speedrunners. Partially, it was due to me being a speedrunner, but they specifically mentioned Devil Daggers being why, like, a big part of why I got invited. I ended up playing that a lot on stream. I did like a impromptu 24-hour stream of the first day of it, and that was the first time when id Software, kind of the employees there, posted, like, they mentioned me on Twitter and my stream. And to someone who's grown up with id Software games, and who actually, like, id Software was the first company for me where I was aware that these are games made by actual people. They just don't pop out of nowhere. And I knew, you know, John Romero and Carmack and Tom Hall and all these people. I had followed them, and I was like, oh my god, it's Software. I was kind of starstruck at that moment. And then the game came out later, and I instantly, that was, like, to this day, Doom 2016 is the biggest thing that's happened to my stream. Like, that's at that point, it just, everything completely exploded.
That's when you were crowned a rock star.
I wouldn't say that, but sure. But yeah, I played through it. Then I did my first, I was the second in the world to complete Ultra Nightmare outside of the office.
Wow.
Quite an achievement.
I was the first person to do it live. So I still have that. then I did a bunch of speedruns. And I think unfortunately, some of my speedruns of the game, which are very outdated, they're still doing well on YouTube, which I hope people find the current world records instead of my old ass runs that don't mean anything at this point. But it's still, like, you know, it's cool. And then because of that, I one day, while I was sleeping, and then I woke up, looked at my phone, and I saw an email from Bethesda, which I thought was a joke at first, where the person contacting me said that they would like to invite me to QuakeCon. And as someone who's, you know, I'm just a regular Joe, I don't know what that's about. I thought it was a joke. I didn't know what that would mean. I didn't know if I had to pay my own tickets.
All you had to do was give them your credit card information, the numbers on the back, you know, because they were going to get you to QuakeCast and give you $1 million kind of scam.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But then it ended up being legit, and we organized it. They flew me out to Dallas. I stayed at the hotel where the event was happening. And so the whole thing was that they wanted me to do a speedrun of Doom 2016 at a panel. So it was a room, and which ended up being full. We had around, I think it was around 150 people there. It was jam-packed. It was crazy that we had a lot of technical difficulties. It was supposed to be streamed as well, but that didn't end up being a thing because there were technical difficulties, and we had like an hour of setup in a hotel room full of people on a day with like 40 degrees Celsius, and not like only like two people left. They just waited and everyone watched the run, and it was crazy. We even had, like, while the downtime the setup time, we did a small Q&A. I had a couple of the guys from id there as well, who were co-commentating the whole thing, and we did a little Q&A before, and then I did the run, and it was a lot of fun. And yeah, it, just in general, like getting invited there, I couldn't really process it when I was there. I was there for a week, and I had a chance to also visit the id offices and hang out with a lot of the guys. And I'm happy that I can now call some of them my friends. It's still like when I think back to it, it's crazy. I don't know.
And how was the pressure for that speed run that you were doing live?
It was like nothing. I honestly didn't like it. I don't really mind if I'm doing something in front of a crowd that I know I'm good at. I don't have any issues with it.
Do you defuse bombs for a living? Because you seem pretty chill. You got to be calm, I guess, to do this job.
I don't know. You get used to it. Speedruns, it's stressful to do it like just in your own, like in your own room, sitting at a computer trying to get a personal best. Like if it's around that, which often is the case, where it requires a trick that's hard to execute, and then you're under pressure because you're on pace to improve your personal best. It kind of comes with the job.
So you may have already answered this, but one of the questions I definitely want to get to was, what so far has been your proudest speed running moment? I mean, or one of the proudest moments, like were you even surprised yourself a little?
Definitely the QuakeCon thing. Like it's not like I've done a lot of cool runs, and you know, I do have my favorite runs. I don't necessarily have a favorite, but some runs that I just prefer doing, they're more fun than others. But just in general, in terms of all the speedrunning stuff I've done, it's definitely the QuakeCon thing.
Cool. So I wanted to ask you though, if this is still accurate, I see on your sheet you have a world record speedrun for Daikatana.
Yes, I do. I've had it for a while.
How's that? Because nice. I know that Daikatana has NPCs. Mm-hmm. So how does that affect the run?
Well, it doesn't.
You can give us some details on that one.
So like currently with Daikatana, there's a fan patch for Daikatana. There's still an active community that patches the game and polishes it up, which those patches are great. They're so good. Like, and with those patches, they've added the option to turn off the AI, so you don't have to deal with them. But even before those patches were a thing, there was like one guy who had done a run of Daikatana in vanilla, and even then you could turn off the AI by setting up a co-op server. So he would set up a co-op server and just play alone. That would disable the AI and he would still go on. But yeah, now we don't have to worry about the AI at all.
So the speedrun standard, I suppose, is based on no AI.
Yes.
Nice.
And it's on a specific version of the fan patch because they ended up fixing some of the skips, map specific skips that we use in the run. So it's on a bit of an older version before they, like now they've actually, Daikatana is weird as a game. I like it a lot, but it's got odd things, like the movement is kind of, it's based on Quake 2, but then it's weird. It's slippery and sticky at the same time, and your jump inputs are delayed, and it's just odd all around. But the fan patches, they've actually fixed that these days, and it feels very good. But for the speedruns, we don't get that because we have to use an older version.
I see. So would you recommend then for, like, let's say me, I've never played Daikatana. Would you recommend I play it with the fan patch first or without?
Yes, definitely use the fan patch. I mean, I've played with the AI like once, and I'm trying to block that out of my memory. It definitely makes
even
it
like for a casual, like even for a casual player, because I did start the game recently and I do want to go back to it with the patch, but just like kind of just get rid of the AI and it'll be just rewarding. Okay.
I don't think the AI adds that much. It adds more annoyance than anything. And the fan patch is like, they fix a lot of things and they make the experience more polished. And you can, like, if you can play it with a friend, co-op works. It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I've the part of the game I went through, I hadn't met my buddies yet, or at least I hadn't had them in, you know, in a level with me. So I'm very early on into the game. In fact, I'll just probably restart it. But that's good to know. I mean, that's because that's a game that comes up quite often, especially with the trench broom stuff, because you can actually make levels for Daikatana, which is
so
really
excited
cool.
For that.
It's pretty rad. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to play the game, because I knew eventually, way down the line, I would have some kind of video on it and some kind of input on for people who are asking questions about it. But that's good to know. And I will say, I remember playing the demo back in the day and just being, ugh, whatever, there's other games, you know, and which was, I think, the general reaction to the game when it came out. It was buggy and it wasn't that great and whatever. Yeah. But I think it has supposedly aged well and people love retro FPS. So, I mean, it's going to have a resurgence.
I think a lot of it is because, you know, it has a certain reputation, and definitely the first few levels of it aren't that appealing. Like, they go crazy with the colored lighting, so it's all green, and there's mosquitoes buzzing in your ear, and you're in a swamp with mechanical frogs and alligators. But it gets like, because the episodes are themed in different time periods, and you get different weapon sets for every period. It's cool. There's a lot of cool stuff in that game.
If someone wants to get into speedrunning and they just have no clue except for just doing the game as quickly as possible, what should they do?
Well, first, you should probably look up if someone has done a speedrun of the game in the past, which often, like, I personally end up running a lot of obscure games in the sense of that, of the scale of the speedrunning community. Like, there usually is one or two guys who might have been active at some point, and sometimes not even that. There might be one segment that run of the game that's been done. So first you should look up if there is a run of the game that exists, and if there are active people who are still doing it, and then maybe message them and ask them. Especially like if it's your first speed game, it's going to be a bit of a hurdle either way, because it's kind of overwhelming to get started. Once you've got a few games under your belt, you can just pick up anything and go at it because you know how to approach it. But and then, of course, you need a way to record your run. You need a lot of people use LiveSplit, which is a program that allows you to have a timer on your screen, and you can separate, like, you can create splits specific to wherever start and then start, end, and whatever, however many splits you want to have in between. And some games, more popular games, they might even have an auto splitter or a load remover made for them that works with live split. So every time the game loads, the timer pauses and all that. But I don't know, just get started. Just do it. Look up a run. If there isn't no run, just try and make one yourself. Speedrunning is a lot of, like, especially if you're glitch hunting, it's kind of, I don't know, it requires a certain mindset to try and break the game in unexpected ways.
Right. So are there communities that are kind of based around, I mean, I'm sure there's tons of communities, but is there kind of one really good specific community that you can, you know, look at other people's times, et cetera? Is there any of that out there?
There's like game specific communities. There's speedrun.com, I think. It's speedrun.com and not speedruns.com, but that's like that site contains leaderboards for every game imaginable. And then there's Speedruns Archives, which usually you can find all the I think they even have a forum, which is not that active anymore, where like you have game specific topics and all that. And they also archive like segment that runs. So that's where you could find a segment that run of a game that doesn't have an active community behind it. And then there's stuff like the Speedruns Live, which if you go on the site, it gives you a list. You can make it so that your stream gets it's over there, so you can watch anyone who's displayed in there. And they also have, I think they still do races where they use IRC, which In 2019, it's funny to find communities that still use IRC.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, but they use that for organizing races for specific games, and then they do those for fun. And then other communities might do races just in them. A lot of people these days have Discord servers and whatnot. But yeah, there's a couple of sites that you can find.
Yeah, in fact, there's a Quake speed mapping Discord as well that I can put an invite to that in the in the show notes for everybody to check out since we're a Quakecast. That's very cool. That's a pretty amazing. And I noticed on your sheet there, you've got in-game time and real-time attack, and there's all kinds of, you know, different nomenclature that you have to learn and kind of bone up on when you do these things.
Yeah.
So how the hell, one thing I'm really curious about, how the hell do you approach doing a speed run for an open world game like Rage 2? Because you've got the world record in Rage 2.
Well, Rage 2 is kind of, well, it's not that difficult. You just got to figure out what the steps are to complete the game. That's what you start with, and then you figure out the things between. Obviously, like the first thing I did, for example, you know where the last mission is to complete the game. First, I try to break through, like clip out of bounds somewhere and get to that last mission before doing anything else. Like as soon as the game starts, I book it to that location and I just try and clip in, which I managed. I was so close to just breaking the whole game, but it soft locks Rage 2 specifically. It soft locks at the second to last like mini boss before the actual boss, and I can't finish it. So I was really close to like doing that with that game specifically, but yeah, it's just figuring out the necessary steps and then figuring out which steps you could skip using whatever methods. Like it really depends on the game, how, you know, going out of bounds, how you can do that, depending on the skills of your character. And with Rage 2, I also did a lot of optimizing in terms of the combat, which is a lot of fun. There's ammo management. Like I always enjoy, that's one of the things that I really enjoy when figuring out a speedrun, is just the ammo management and the fights themselves and weapon management and all that.
So I opened up speedrun.com and I was poking around. And so you could search for a game and find the leaderboard.
Yeah.
And if you click on like the user, whether it's first, second, third, whatever, it would link you to the world record run, or, you know, whatever second place run, with a bunch of details on the game and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's actually a very nicely maintained site.
Yeah, it's the most popular one. It kind of overtook Speedrun's archive, and everyone uses this in the speedrun community now. This is like as soon as a new game is even announced, maybe, or is close to release, someone is going to set up a leaderboard for it, and everyone's at the ready. And you can like, you can click at the, if you're looking at a leaderboard, you can click at a player's name and it will take you to that user's list of all the games that they have on the site. So it's a lot of cool stuff. And then there's game specific. There's a forum for each game if there's people that have made topics and whatnot. And then you can find resources and guides. But yeah, it really depends on the game how much stuff there is.
Yeah, so that's probably a good place for, let's say, aspiring speed mappers to check before trying to make their mark. Or as they're trying to make their mark.
You mean speed runners? You're a speed mapper.
Did I say speed mapper?
Yeah,
speed runner. That must have been a slip.
I mean, I guess that's a good transition to perhaps mapping and game development.
To say.
Yeah, you go for it.
Yeah, so I mean, you did a SM185 map. That was a while ago. You also did a DM4 jam. So actually, before we even go there, why don't you tell us how you got into mapping in the first place?
I think the first time I stumbled upon a map editor was in like Warcraft 3, whenever that was, just messing around with terrain and placing it down trees or whatever. But that was, you know, just doing things as a kiddo. But I've been interested in mapping for a long time, and I've tried to start mapping for Doom 1 and 2. I don't remember what editors I tried, but I never got really far. I had friends who also did the same. And then I think the first time I properly tried mapping was in a game called Reflex, or Reflex Arena, which is an arena FPS multiplayer game, which has its own map editor in game. And it's really nifty. And I played around with that a lot, never released anything. And multiplayer mapping really isn't my thing. But that was the first time I got into it. And then later, I don't think I had even, I'm not sure if I had played Quake by that point when I was messing around in Reflex, but I think after playing Arcane Dimensions, I got really interested, like it, just the scale of things, how compared to vanilla Quake, Arcane Dimensions, which is crazy to me.
And
that was the first custom thing that I played for Quake. And then I went, I looked around other custom things, and I was just, it was so amazing. And yeah, that's how I got interested in Quake specifically. And then when DM4 Jam came around, I just decided that, okay, maybe now is a good time to pick up mapping, because I've been thinking about it a lot. And then Dump Truck was doing the Trench Broom tutorial series, which really helped. So thank you for that. It like that completely helped me get started. It was so easy to set up. Like Trench Broom itself is just easy to learn. Like if a dummy like me can pick it up, anyone can. But the tutorial series like really made it so easy. And I just, with the DM4 Jam, that was when it was fun, just because I had to learn the tools from zero. I had to learn the game entities from zero, and just everything I'm figuring out was a lot of fun.
And if I remember correctly, was that a collaboration, or did you like, I can't remember now.
Yeah. Did my friend Promius helped me a bit with it. Like I was stressing out so much with that map.
It was really ambitious, just so everybody knows who hasn't played it. It's a really fantastic map, but it did turn out really well. But I know you went through some hell there in development.
Yeah. Thank you. I personally think that map is terrible. I can't look at it. The only area in it that I kind of like visually is the last area with like the lava and the kind of broken area. I don't even remember, like, the before you drop down in the get the LG and drop down in the water. But Promius helped me. He did all the rock work, all the tri-soups, which in hindsight was a mistake because it was so hard to get that map to this properly. I had to try and figure out his messes and fix it. No, it was just like, it was messy. Nothing was like funk detail, and there was no like, because at that point I had no idea how to do anything, and he did neither. We were both just getting into Trench Room and being interested in it. But, you know, it was the last few days, troubleshooting was something.
It was pretty funny because, just real quickly, JCR, I remember those days because I ran that jam, and it was the only first one and only one I've ever really run. But it was great. It turned out great. Everything worked out perfectly. But I remember looking at your guys' map going, God, this is unbelievable. I haven't heard of these guys. And then you're asking these noob questions on the Discord. I'm like, what? Wait a minute. What the hell's going on here? So that was just a fun little anecdote that you have this magnificent brushwork and this crazy lighting and everything. And I was just going, well, they don't know that part. Funk detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I was going to pretty much say something along those lines, that the end product fooled me. I thought you guys were like pros that have been doing this forever, and I just never saw your work before or something. So, you know, it was awesome. That was a great map.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. I'd say like that was my personally my first map. And as I said, Promius helped with the rock work, and he did the room, the last fight before the exit. Otherwise it's all me. But Promius I met him in Reflex, and he did maps for Reflex, and he ended up getting a few of his maps officially in the game, which was awesome.
So how does the editor in Reflex compare to Trench Broom?
Well, it's an in-game editor, and you can do multiplayer editing, which I think that's the best part about it. But it's still like, it's a bit modernized. Like you have models that you can place in, and that's how you do your detailing. And it doesn't have textures, but it does have like brushes that you can select and manipulate the vertexes and all that. So it's not too like dissimilar to something like Trench Broom, but it is like, it's pretty nice to be able to hop on a server and start a map in edit mode, and then someone else can join in and you can do things cooperatively, like just live.
So you can like edit a map while you're like running like a server, and people can join you and play what you have so far, or?
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty crazy. It reminds me of the cube stuff, but I haven't never tried Reflex. It's pretty sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a cool game. Like Reflex is basically, it was supposed to be a spiritual successor to CPMA, a Quake 3 mod. And a couple of the people, as far as I remember, there existed a CPMA 2 that was in development at some point, and a couple of the people who were working on that ended up working on Reflex. And Reflex, I think it started as a three-man project from Australia. I don't know what's up with these three-man projects from Australia. It happens with every game, but as with Devil Daggers. But they did a Kickstarter, which failed, and then they ended up releasing the game on Steam in early access, I think late 2014 or something like that. And I instantly picked it up and, yeah, kind of fooled around with it.
So now you're involved with another FPS arena shooter right now called Diabotical. Yes. And I took a look at some of the links you sent me, and that looks like a hell of a lot of fun. How did you get involved with that project?
I think it started with, well, first of all, Promius, who again helped me with the Info Jam, who I met in Reflex. He is the lead level designer, and he also does environment art for that game. So that's a fun little connection there. But before that, I was kind of into playing Quake Champions a lot, not so much anymore. But I think through that, I at least knew some of the people working on the game. And then at some point, they also knew of me based on my speedruns and maybe from some of the Arena FPS stuff or me playing them and streaming them. And I just asked if I could like get access to their build and maybe help them out, just play test it. But for a long time, I didn't really do anything. But for the last couple of months, I've been, I just wanted to, because Promius does so much in terms of the maps. Like he himself, he makes the blockouts, he improves them, he iterates on them, then he does the R pass, he does lighting, he did collision, like all by himself. That's like, he does the job of three people or four people. And that's a lot when you're like trying to make a game and trying to actually get it finished. And there's a lot of maps. So I just thought that originally I would have liked to maybe contribute a few maps, but again, as I said, multiplayer mapping really isn't my thing, at least yet. I'd have to like actually get into it properly, because it's a completely different like ballpark from single player mapping. So it's a bit, you can't just jump in from one to another. So I was like, I can't do maps, but maybe I can help find, because I'm a speedrunner, I like breaking maps. And Arena FPS games, multiplayer games, they kind of require specific types of collision for things, for the environments to be smooth and all that. And so I decided that maybe I could find some things that irk me on these maps. And at first I reported them to Promius and then he would fix them. But at some point I was like, what if I just do it myself? Because that game also has an in-game editor, just like Reflex. It's a bit different in terms of how you build things, but in essence, it's the same thing. You can hop on a server and you can edit maps with other players. So it's pretty easy to open a map and start looking at it in edit mode and be like, okay, that seems weird. Maybe I'll fix it by doing this and this. And then I did that for like a map or two, just fixing collision issues. And then I sent them to Promius and then he would okay them. And then at some point, there was a specific CTF map that I was like, why don't you let me do the collision completely? And I did it. And then that was good. And then I just kept doing it. And now I've done quite a few maps and I'm still working on that. So I'm doing collision passes on maps that have received art passes and everything else in them is done. And then I also look at, they have a prop system. So basically just models, like whatever you want to put on the maps to make the odd passes. I check out the collisions on those and all that.
So when you say collision, are you referring to like where the player can and cannot go? Yeah. Is it like what we think of as clipping?
Yeah, it's the same as just clipping windows. You don't want the player to jump out of, but in the setting of a multiplayer game, where like
Quake games specifically, like all arena FPS games in general, it's also kind of weird jumping, because there's a lot of arena FPS games that are older in terms of visual fidelity and all that, and this is like more towards modern games. So there's always been like the collision needs to be smooth, you know, you got to be able to run along walls smoothly without bumping into everything and all that. So it's a lot of figuring out what works best and trying to make it as smooth of an experience for the player as possible. So things on the map make sense, but they're not too jaggy and all that.
Right. I should probably learn a little bit of that. So the other thing I noticed, and you know, just from the odd GIFs and the videos I've seen for Diabotical, it looks really smooth and really slick and really fast. So I don't know, shed some details on that. Tell us more about the actual specifics of the game, if you could.
Yeah. So Diabotical is it's a multiplayer centric arena FPS, more akin to something like Quake Live than Quake Champions. And a lot of it's being worked on by professional Quake players and being tested by professional Quake players. But the focus of it is to make it a fun game, an accessible game to new players as well. And it's been, I think I remember reading about it as an idea by the leading man who's Too Good, or James Harding, I think is his last name. I remember correctly. I probably should. But he's been talking about the game for a long time, the idea that he wants to build on his own arena FPS, like, and all that. But then they kickstarted it as well, I think maybe in 2016. I don't actually remember when that happened, but that was successful. And now it's been in full development, like 7 days a week for a while now. And it's supposed to come out this year at some point. When it's done,
I couldn't keep my eyes off of it when I was taking a look for research today, and I watched some of your gameplay. You know, some of the Last Man Standing style. I can't remember the name of the game mode, but Wipeout. And so, it looks cool. I love the art style. And if for people who haven't checked it out, definitely go take a look, because it does look smooth as silk. The art direction is really cool. I love how the weapons are upgraded. Like the shotgun becomes a double and then triple. And I'm assuming maybe a quad barrel, just based on screenshot I saw. But really cool, nice, innovative little things. You know, it's pretty slick. I will definitely be looking at this, especially if it has all those. Like, how many game modes does it have currently? Because you mentioned, you know, Wipeout, CTF, probably Team, right?
Yeah, there's Wipeout, there's CTF, there's Duel, there's TDM or Brawl, as it's called in the game, and then Instagib. And I don't know, it depends what ends up in the actual final product, because things, you know, I don't know how much I can say about the actual thing.
Sure, but yeah.
They are modes.
Well, I was going to say, don't let, like, for the more hardened gamers out there, don't let the art style and the character design fool you, because it looks like the movement is spot on. And, you know, I don't know how people feel about this, but I think it's kind of cool as a parent. You know, this would be a first-person shooter arena that I would have no problem letting my kid play, a younger child play with me. And that's not a knock on it. You know, that's just a direction they went for. And so you got to make a stand when you're being creative. And I think it actually works pretty well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know if you saw it in the footage, but there's like these little handheld, like Weebles, they're called. Like, you, it's like a little robot that you hold in your hand, and they have different abilities. Like in Wipeout, in that footage, there's a healing Weeble that you throw it like a grenade, and then it heals people in the zone. And then there's like an explosion Weeble that sends you flying, like it has huge knockback. And there's other ones as well. Those are like those are my favorite thing about the game. They're so damn cute.
I just had to add that I'm on the Kickstarter page, and I'm just watching the GIFs play over and over again. And it's like, yeah, that is just so awesome. It's capturing all of the, what makes arena FPS games entertaining. At least that's what I get from it.
Yeah, I think that's the point as well. Like, whereas I think a lot of core gamers of Arena FPS were not too satisfied with Quake Champions, for example, which ended up being a thing. But this is supposed to be like a tight experience based around movement and all the like. It's not supposed to be, as I said, it's not supposed to be only for the pro gamers. It's supposed to be fun for everyone and accessible and, you know, the whole package. And hopefully just an entertaining little game.
Cool. Well, we will definitely reach out to the developers because I'm now kind of a little obsessed with this now because I don't really sample a lot of new games, really, especially arena first-person shooters because I'm old. but this one has, you know, definitely has my attention for sure. So I wanted to ask you about any future possible mapping projects where like, you know, or maybe more focused back on Quake 1. Is there anything that you felt like you haven't really tackled yet with either gameplay, speedruns, mapping?
Well, mapping specifically, I'm honestly like, I at the end of 2019, I was like, okay, I wanted to map way more this year than I actually did. And I wanted to increase that map output in 2019, and somehow we're halfway through the year and I don't think I've released a single thing this year. Time just flies. In general, I'm just very like, I still map, I just don't have a lot to show for it because I'm never satisfied with what I do and I'm kind of all over the place when it comes to a single map. Like I might not have a single area that's fit enough for a screenshot that I would be happy with. And even if I like take a screenshot, I'm like, okay, there's 5,000 wrong things with this area. I'm just going to fix those instead of posting this.
And that's kind of like a pitfall. And a lot of guys, I think, fall into that where it's like, everything has to be perfect, perfect, perfect. That's definitely not me, but a lot of the guys I've spoken to that kind of fall into that rut of, oh, I'm going to release this after I fix this and then fix that, find something else. Oh, I'm going to release it after I fix that. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. I struggle a lot with just finishing project. Like I've started multiple maps for jams or speed mapping sessions. And I just end up with map scraps after that, that I may or may not be somewhat happy with. But I also struggle with the fact that after a deadline hits and I miss it, due to me just getting too focused on environment art instead of making a map, which used to happen a lot. It happens less now because I'm still like working on my workflow and what works best for me. I have issues being able to focus on a map past the deadline. Like I instantly lose interest in them, especially speed maps, because you're trying to go as fast as possible and make all these cool things still. But then it ends up being a mess. And after you missed the deadline and you thought that you liked the map, you're instantly like, oh God, that's so messy. I have to clean all this up. And also, I personally don't really like working in vanilla anymore. I preferred like Arcane Dimensions, for example. So every time I miss a deadline, I'm like, okay, well, now I can make this an Arcane Dimensions map. Okay, well, now I have thousands of possibilities on what I could do. I don't have a deadline. Oh God, there's too many things. And that happens with every single map that I do. But
that's because the possibilities are endless.
Yeah,
With great power comes great responsibility.
Right? Yeah, it's really hard to keep a project in scope. I just don't know how to do it. I still struggle with that so much. But like right now, as I said, I wanted to release more maps and I do have map scraps. I have a few maps that I'm actually somewhat like they have a solid idea behind them and they have a base in terms of what the level is going to look like. So I'm planning currently, like I'm trying to set a schedule for it and set deadlines for the maps. And I would like to make a smallish episode, Arcane Dimensions episode, with like four main maps and maybe a secret map and then an end map and a couple of other secrets that I don't want to talk about.
Do it. We need more episodes. And we're going to talk to Lunar and later about Copper. And, you know, it's just really refreshing to have a nice little episode to play through because you know, a lot of focus in the community lately has been jams and speed mapping sessions. And those are great. And there's a lot of great output, magnificent gameplay. But, you know, just having a proper episode where you're sitting down by yourself kind of you know, trudging through, and there's this theme going from one to the other is really cool.
Yeah.
So please do it, man.
Already looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your stuff's great. You're very humble about your mapping, but yeah, if there's anybody we want to see more from, it's you, man. And I follow you on Twitter, so I do see some of those screenshots from time to time.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. I personally don't. I really like the Quake mapping community in general. It's like the support that you get from people is really nice. I don't like any of my maps. I don't think there's anything really good in them. And like, I haven't even released that many maps. I released one jam map, which was my first map. So by default, it sucks. And then I've released a few speed maps, but that's it. And otherwise, there's been just a few screenshots here and there. But yeah, it's nice. Like, for example, when the DM4 jam map came out, the response was so nice. Like, everyone was so nice and positive about it. And I even like getting Sock sent me a message on Twitter about it, which I was I fanboyed over Sock's maps a lot. So it was,
I was gonna say, dude, that's pretty crazy, because for your first map too, you jerk. It's pretty amazing. No, that's great. That's great.
I was gonna say, just look at my first map and compare it to yours.
Oh, you should never do that. Comparing yourself to your work to others is that's not good.
It's I agree. But just to get you some perspective on what you made, you know,
I don't want to.
Well, wait, Jiraku, do you have an art background? Because we didn't really talk about your background too much. No, really?
That's
really surprising. You can usually spot people with an art background of the way they map.
So. No, I do. I've done a bit of graphic design, but nothing like too artsy. I can't draw at all, and I don't really know.
So there's hope for me eventually, because I can barely draw a stick figure. But
I think I just have a good eye for environments. And that's another pitfall of mine, that I really just like making things that look cool instead of focusing on, or even like starting with, like, I can't start blockouts. I can't, as I said, like, I can't draw, so I can't plan anything on paper. I can't put my thoughts on paper. I have to start it in 3D instantly. I go in the editor and start doing things. But if I try and just do a simple block out, I can't imagine what the map will be like. I have to actually do it, which means that I map really slow, because it makes iteration on different areas harder. And it's just, it's a bit messy, but I'm trying to work on what.
Yeah, workflow is, honestly, out of all the things that I've struggled with over the years, I think scale and workflow, like, scale for beginners is really tough. And then once you get the scale, you're like, okay, I got this.
Oh, yeah.
But then workflow is something that continually changes. But I think I've arrived at one. And I think I'm a little bit like you, because I used to draw things out on paper, or at least kind of just block out the floors and stuff. But I don't know. It just always kind of ended up in disaster. But the last couple maps I've made that I've been happy with were speed maps. And I just did them freeform, and, you know, you just experiment and you just kind of make decisions and go. And I think I might stick to that methodology from now on and really not map things out.
Well, and yeah. I think to piggyback on that, I think speed mapping as an exercise in restricting your scope is another thing, you know, because like we mentioned before, when the possibilities are endless, you'll never finish a damn thing. So restricting your scope, I think, is also pretty crucial.
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's like with old games in general, like, they were dealing with limits and restrictions. Like, that's always like, that breeds creativity, as they say. And it's good. Like, speed maps, definitely. Ideally you focus on the essentials, which I've never been able to do. But yeah, speed maps are great for practice.
And, you know, to jump back on Diabotical, that's kind of the impression I got from the game, was that they're focusing on the fundamentals of that genre. So that's probably the recipe for success, at least in part.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, one thing I forgot to ask you, and I hate to circle back to something we were talking about earlier, but Diabotical reminded me of Defrag. Now, how much experience do you have with kind of the Defrag scene and that kind of movement and that sub genre of speed runs? Oh, really? So you haven't?
I am not a defragger. I've never liked defrag. I've played my fair share of like games like Counter-Strike Source, Team Fortress 2, and those have like surf maps and KZ maps and whatever. And then I've played, as mentioned, Reflex, and I've played some Quake Live, and I've played a bunch of Arena FPS at this point and checked them out, but not really like focused on them apart from Reflex. But I've never liked defrag. It's not the type of a thing that I like.
Good to know. I apologize.
No, it's fine. But basically, like for me, when I started Reflex, you know, I didn't know anything about the movement. And Reflex has movement similar to CPMA, which is kind of an evolution of Quake World. So you have your air control, and you've got stair jumps, and you got all kinds of ramp jumps and different things. So it's like I think that kind of movement is harder to learn than just strafe jumping, which is already hard enough. Like it's always hard to try and like explain how strafe jumping works to someone who has no idea about it, and so I had to learn all of that from zero, but I would do it on actual maps instead of defrag maps, as some people do. Like the specific defrag maps that are meant for learning, like they have repeated like patterns of like you have to make jump this gap, and they increase the gap by increments, and then you just repeat your circle jumps and try and learn that way. But I always preferred learning on actual maps that I end up playing in duel, for example. So that way I can also learn the maps, because I have to do that as well as a new player. So I always just jumped around the maps, and then I played duels, and then I slowly got better at the movement. And yeah.
Yeah. I've had your Twitch and your YouTube, channels open. I'm just scrolling through with my jaw, like dropping down, because a lot of times I won't watch speedruns because I haven't played the game, but there's definitely a bunch of games that I would never play that I'm going to just totally, you know, while I'm on the elliptical, I'm just going to be watching your speed runs. So it's very cool. You've got an impressive body of work on that front, and you've entertained thousands of, it looks like you've got 22,000 Twitch followers, and you have, let's see, 36,000 on YouTube. So you've entertained a lot of people. So good for you, man. You're making your mark. It's very cool stuff.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Quakecast. Before we sign off, I want to remind people about another great Quake-related podcast called The Keep. And it's run by Motherload. He was a guest on the show the other day. And I just want to remind people, go check out his show. He's got a lot of very multiplayer-focused conversations over there. It's good stuff. So, JCR, where can people find you?
You could search YouTube for JCR9001 and twitch.tv/JCR9001.
And you can find me on YouTube as well. Just search for dumptruck_DS. And then I keep saying Draku or Draku. I guess it's Draku, Draku.
I thought it was Draku, but
Draku, Dracula.
Oh, we should have asked him that.
I know. What were we thinking? Damn it.